think it's what ends up happening is we live a very conditional life, you know, and it's only when I do certain things that I'm worthy and that I, you know, I can look at myself and be happy about who I am or about the situation. And then if those criteria aren't fulfilled, then I'm unhappy and it's terrible.
Which, bro, they never are, or they might be fulfilled for 30 seconds. It's actually a fool's game because you never arrive, bro. Never. You actually never arrive. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous what we've done to ourselves. We are enslaved ourselves more so than anything else.
Hi, and welcome to the Expansive Podcast, a podcast that is all about how to live a more expansive life. It's a friendship that turned into a podcast that turned into a best-selling book. I don't know where we go from here, dude. What is next? Where do we go from best-selling book?
Joe Rogan. Joe, can you hear us? Joe. Where else is there to go? It used to be Oprah. Now you're like, nah, who's next? Joe Rogan. Okay, Joe.
Not Diary of a CEO?
No. I've had words with Steven. You know what I mean? I broke up with Steven. And I can't go back to him after I ranted about him being clickbaity.
That's your second breakup for the year, though. CNN.
Who was my first breakup? Oh, Scott Galloway. I've also broken up with Scott Galloway. Yeah. Mm. That's so funny. You know, when I did the breakup with Steve Bartwell online, a friend of mine messaged me and said, Bart, you see, I've forgotten his name already. Who cares? Anyway, in fact, my friend's meeting him today. He's in Cape Town today. So Ryan's actually going to go meet him. Yeah. My friend messaged me and said, I also broke up with Scott Galloway earlier this year. I was like, yo, me too. He's like, yeah, I couldn't listen to him anymore. I was like, me too. I was like, what the hell? These guys are ranting. They're using their podcasts as rant places. And when you don't share their rant that they have, eventually you're like, this guy's just using this platform to share angry years and also dissing other people. When you diss, like Scott Galloway spent far too much time dissing, he's got like beef with Elon Musk. He's like, get on with it, man. He crushes you. There's no competition between you and him. Just stop it. And also being too woke and too Democrat. And then now obviously with Steve Bartlett having Mo Gawat on. I mean, shocking. Shocking to give somebody like that a voice to only preach negativity into our lives.
But isn't he the guy that also wrote
Happiness?
About happiness?
Exactly. Like, what a dichotomy you are in, my friend. You wrote a book called A Billion Happy, and then only is on podcast telling us that we're going to go to hell. Oh, well. Anyway, let's not talk about other podcasts that we've broken up with. Let's talk about other things.
I did have a question for you.
Yes.
It wasn't related to... it slipped my mind.
All right. Well, I've got two questions for you.
Yeah, kick it off.
Yeah. Okay. So if you were athletic, what sports would you do? It's a serious question. What would you do?
Funny.
Let's say you were athletic. That's an example. If you were athletic, what sports would you
do? Do you mean if I was more athletic?
I specifically use the term athletic. Okay. Second question. You can see how well I've prepped these questions. Second question.
I can see that.
If you were smart, what career would you have, Rick? What do you think you would be doing if you were smart, Eric? If you were like...
Your preparation for the pod never ceases to amaze me.
I saw this TikTok about how to rage, or what? Man bait. I think the TikTok was called man bait. It's like, how do you bait a man? This lady DJ had like six questions that all of them were so hectic. Like, if you were lean, how would you do that? Like, yeah, that's like ridiculous.
That's so good, though.
So good, eh? So good. And you thought I had a serious question for you coming.
I really did. And now we've just lost
really
like 20 minutes of the pod is now gone because I was like, oh, John brought some real substance to the pod today. Turns out that was spent in 2 minutes.
Pleasure.
On a more serious note, so I have three kind of reflections for us, just based on things that I've been observing. The first was I watched the Dricus and Khamzat fight just on TikTok. I didn't watch the whole fight. But I was watching them in the run-up to the event. So for those who might not know what I'm talking about, the UFC middleweight championship was this past weekend. And Dricus is from South Africa. He was defending his belt. Khamzat was the contender. And something struck me when they were doing their like pre-game interviews, like pre-fight interviews. And like Dricus is walking down the hallway and there's cameras on him. And he's saying like, I can't wait to like beat him, show him like what it's about, you know, like kind of sort of general trash talk kind of stuff. And then they zoom to Khamzat and he's walking down and he says, I'm just happy to be here to fight. And I was like, that's the guy that you need to be worried about. The guy who is just happy to come and do the thing. Like he enjoys what he does. And that's the guy that you need to be careful of. And it linked to me to a quote that I posted earlier in the week that said, the person who loves walking will go further than the person who loves the destination. And we've spoken about this a few times on the pod, actually. You know, it's like we get so obsessed about the destination that we forget to just love what we are doing in the process. And I'm like, you can bet all the money in the world that the guy who loves the process, the guy who loves the fight, to be in it just for the fight, he's going to go much further. Like, and I wanted to make the post, and then I was like, but like, I don't want to be controversial about this. And then when he won, I was like, I should have made the post. Viral opportunity missed. What are your thoughts?
It's the same idea about that English and Norwegian crew that went to the North Pole. Remember? It's the same story there, is that the guys who were Norwegians would do 8 miles a day and the British would just go as far as they can. They just wanted to finish it. Systems beat goals. And we've spoken about that. And what you measure is really determines your behavior and your longevity to it. And I didn't even see that part of the interview. But what I could see was Dricus's body language had lost already before he started the game. He had come in as the junior boy. He wasn't coming in as alpha into that match. And I remember listening to Rassie Erasmus talk about the Springboks, the rugby team, winning the World Cup 2 times in a row. And the way he was speaking was like, everybody has to expect us to win. Everybody, even the competition, needs to have an inkling that we're going to win, even their fans. And that's when we win. And I think with Dricus coming in, his body language had already lost the game. And you could see he really wasn't performing. And it was funny because the day before, I was speaking to a UFC fighter in South Africa, and he was telling me about Dricus's unbelievable longevity in the ring, because he's like the fittest guy, and he spars with like 10 guys, and every guy that he can put down taps out and moves, and he's like sparring with 10 guys over and over and over. So we're talking about a serious athlete here, and a serious, like, Afrikaners are known for this, right?
Like, yeah, for sure.
Strong, keep going like a tractor, you know what I mean?
Have you seen on, no, you wouldn't have seen, but on CakeNet, so the Afrikaans channel in SA, there's now a show called Muraboor.
And like, it's, that means beat a Dutchman. Beat an Afrikaans person. Eh? Moor is beat.
Beat a farmer.
Beat a farmer. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So they have all these farmers in their khaki shorts, and Cameron Simon, the lightweight UFC fighter in SA, he hosts it. And so
they fight with each other.
They fight, dude. Muraboor. Like, they fight. Yeah. Farmers who, they aren't fighters, these farmers.
Of course.
But they take them and then they put them in a ring. I think they give them some MMA training and then they let them fight.
Wow. That's unbelievable. And those Afrikaans people are huge, eh? I mean, they've got an obesity problem. No, they've got a serious health problem.
No, but these are younger guys, but they're all staunch. Oh, okay. Like you, farmers. Yeah.
Tractors. So I mean, Dricus not going in there expecting to win, and also there under the pressure to have to win, didn't see him do well at all. In fact, you know, there was a lot of disappointment, and I'm not even watching it, but I was watching the psychology of it, and it was really interesting. But again, it comes down to systems are dead, you know. I mean, the goals are dead, systems are alive. And even my time here in Cape Town, I've also been really had to get to a point of being very appreciative of being here and enjoying the relaxation that I've had over the last 2 weeks. The first week I was irritated. And I really had to start to measure different things. And the things I started to measure was just the gratitude to be here. What a beautiful place. I'm used to moving around a lot, and I hadn't moved around for the last 2 weeks. So, yeah, even down to like our natural behavior of being grateful for where we are rather than always being impatient to where we're supposed to be or where we think we're supposed to be. That shift in itself really allows a lot of energy to come into the present moment. So, yeah, it says a lot. And Hazmat, was his name Hazmat?
Kamzat. Yeah. I think systems over goals, and also just find what you love. Like if you can just find what you love, it becomes so much easier to just do it on repeat and to have that inclination to want to get better at it all the time versus working towards that goal. And like the goal might inspire you, but does it really inspire you to the point where you are like walking into a ring going, I'm just happy to be here to fight, man. I mean, it gave me goosebumps when I saw it. I was like, this dude is the dude you need to watch out for.
And look, I mean, if I had to go down and walk a dark alley, he would be the scariest guy to walk. I mean, his eyes and his look, I mean, he looks like he's going to rip you apart.
He
looks
does.
Like a human like version of a baboon. Yeah. No, he was hectic. Jesus. No, he was hectic to look at. Hey, good for him.
We were playing paddle the other night in my very athletic manner. And... And we were doing really well. So like the first set, we win 6-2. The second set, we lose 6-3. And then we up 4-love in the third set. And so
is
like,
this against the high school girls again? Eh? Is that the league you dominated?
This was not against them. Though. It was against two friends.
Sorry, no more jokes. Yeah, no more jokes.
We end up drawing that game. So we go from like 4-love up to 6-6. And then there wasn't time to play the tiebreak. And the one thing that shifted was that when we got to 4-love, we started thinking about the win. And we stopped playing with confidence and like playing through our shots. All of a sudden, we were just thinking, winning, 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 winning. And therefore, we started like governing our shots and, you know, trying to finesse it. And everything just fell apart. It's like, just stay in the process. Just stay in that. Because once you're there, you're feeling confident. You're feeling good. You're just like, you're in your body. And I think that's the best place to be.
You can see, I watched the USA final a few years ago, and it was Djokovic against this Argentinian guy. At the time, this Argentinian guy was doing the fastest serves in the world, I think 260 kilometers or something ridiculous. We had cheap seats, so we're sitting right at the back, and I couldn't really see what they were doing. Definitely couldn't see the tennis ball. I mean, we're way too back. But what I saw...
Just two guys swinging a racket.
Yeah, it just looked like two guys, like, you know, like air guitar. We were playing air tennis. I couldn't see the ball. No, but what really changed was halfway through the match, I could see the silhouette of the Argentinian player, and I could see his shoulders slump, and he lost the game. And he was only halfway through the match, bro. He was only halfway through, and his body language changed. And you're like, whoa, his internal dialogue switched. And that's really what the tennis players speak about the most. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter about the points. Just show up. Don't worry where you are on the points. The points is the thing that drags you down, you know?
So that was the first one. So the next one was just a quote that I saw that said, success or failure, must every passing encounter be given a name?
Nice. Wow.
There's that.
I like that.
Yeah, there's that story about the farmer and his son. I'm sure you've heard it before. The son, you know, the farmer buys like a whole big pack of horses, and he's very happy about it. And then the son goes one day and he jumps on one of the horses, and he falls off and he breaks a leg, and they're all very sad about it. And then the army comes around, and you know, they want to recruit the guy, and he's like, I can't, my leg is broken. They're all very happy about it. And it's like the story about like everything that happens to you, you want to respond to it and be like, oh, this is a great thing that happened to me, or oh, this is a terrible thing that happened to me. But then a little bit down the line, that terrible thing might have turned out to be a good thing, and that good thing might have turned out to be a terrible thing. And therefore, like, it actually makes no sense to judge the things in the moment. But it's such a natural thing for us to do. And it's so tough to just experience it without the filter of, oh, this is... like a terrible thing that happened to me.
I don't know if this is going on. I don't know if this is happening in the ether or not, but this has been my whole week here has been about this exact really? Topic. Exact topic. It's like, you know, there's certain things that really have frustrated me in my life. And I'm like, hang on a second. If I didn't go through that, I wouldn't be there. I wouldn't have had that conversation to have opened up that thing. What are you complaining about? Actually, and you're actually working against yourself in such a terrible way. And I watched this TikTok guy talking about the nervous system. I mean, what he also speaks a lot about is mind-body connection, which I think is really important, because what cell phones do and virtual reality glasses, they disconnect us from our bodies. And we have to realize that our coherence between our bodies and our mind is really where the most powerful version of us comes. If we're too heady, we're not connecting with our body. And if we're too into our body, I think the disconnect, too much heart, not enough mind, right? So you need this brain heart coherence. And it's, and the guy was saying that the worst thing you could do to get your nervous system to be off kilter is to be self deprecating and self critical. And said, imagine living with somebody who's never happy with anything that you've done. Your nervous system's continuously in the inner attack. So you're attacking yourself from inside, thinking that's what you should do to actually make yourself work better. But imagine beating your dog every time it didn't do what you exactly wanted to do or what it could do. Eventually, that dog's not going to be reacting to you and it's going to be depressed. And so
yeah,
what
it'll
we've
just be
done
so
here,
reactive. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, reactive. So what we have to also realize is that the self-talk, because of the concept that we are not happy with where we are, so now what we're doing is we're berating the situation and we're berating ourselves as well. So now we've got double berate continuously. And then you ask yourself, where's all the Prozac being eaten? Why is everybody so into alcohol? Why are people so, you know, of course, you have a double barrage of internal dialogue that's negative over negative. And people think they're actually doing a good thing by being angry with things not working out the way I want them to, or being impatient or pushing yourself even harder. Man, those things are the worst things you could be doing. So I think that the skill of ultimate power and elegance is having that state of being, whew, come into the moment, come into the space, see for it what it is, be grateful for it at where it's at. And this is really what you're talking about, is like an elder masterful way of playing the life game, you know, more than anything else. So a great point. It's been such a theme for me this week. So thanks for bringing it up.
I think it's what ends up happening is we live a very conditional life, you know, and it's only when I do certain things that I'm worthy and that I, you know, I can look at myself and be happy about who I am or about the situation. And then if those criteria aren't fulfilled, then I'm unhappy and it's terrible.
Which, bro,
they
never are, or they might be full for 30 seconds. Like, it's actually a fool's game, because you never arrive, bro. Never. You actually never arrive. It's ridiculous, sir.
It's ridiculous
what we've done to ourselves. We are enslaved ourselves more so than anything else.
And then I saw a quote this morning that I think ties into it well. It's from Tim Ferriss, and he said, comparison is a muscle that only strengthens with repetition. How good is that?
Ooh.
And the comparison part of this is huge, right? Ooh. Like that's a big part of us judging where we are and what we are doing and how things are going in our lives. And it's so easy to look around and find hundreds of examples. I've recently installed an app called App Block on my phone, because what I found was that it's become so instinctual for me that if I go onto my phone, I'll go onto Instagram and I'll maybe scroll a bit, but that in itself is a problem. But what's worse is that it becomes the trigger for, let me quickly check Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Gmail,
YouTube. LinkedIn, Facebook,
It just sets off this like chain reaction. And so I've installed this app called AppBlock. It blocks all social media apps on my phone between 8 and 11:30 in the morning. And it's like, it's frustrating, because I open it so many times and I'm like, what? Like, how did I end up on the screen? Like, why am I here?
Yeah.
So it's been really good in doing that for me. And then it goes off at 11:30, comes back on at 1 o'clock. And then I'll use that time to then post things that I might have wanted to post in the mornings. Because actually, if I'm very honest with myself, I don't need social media for catching up with other people's lives, mostly. Like, I don't really need to do that. I want information. I want to learn. So I use it for that a lot. But I don't need to be minute by minute and hour by hour updated with what is John doing right now. Like, what has he just posted? Yeah. Like, if I sit at the end of the day and I look at all your posts and I catch up on it, it's fine. Like, why do I need to spend my entire day thinking about what other people are doing? It's so weird. And even from a posting point of view, because obviously our businesses are built on social media, so we need to have that presence. But you don't need to be present the entire time. Like, you're only posting certain parts of the day anyway. So it's actually been liberating for me to go, I can consume a lot less on social media.
I can't believe this. We're having this thing. I've been going on the same thing. What is going on? Is there something in the sky? What's going on? Maybe it's going through the exact same thing this week.
10,000 minutes of audio recorded. That's why.
But you know also what I've done is now that I've deleted these apps, I've deleted them off my phone. I'm like, no, really? I don't want to engage with them. Not the social media ones, but I've had other apps that have been taking up my time. Like, I'm out. You know what I've been doing, bro? Meditation. Like, I get to a period of time, I'm like, I've actually got nothing to do. I've exercised. I've journaled. I've done all my emails. I've gone through my inbox twice. I've done this and this and this and this. Okay, I'm just going to meditate now. So, like, I just came out just before we started this. I did a meditation because I was done. My day's kind of done. So, you create space for connection on a much deeper level. And I did the electric body workshop. Electric workshop was the place I used to jaw when I was younger. I used to go all the raves there, and I've just electric body workshop. I combine my old rave jaws with my current meditation process. So it's called electric body. And I did that, and it's a 90-minute breathwork Dr. Joe Dispenza meditation. And it's amazing. As I came out of it, I started deleting all the apps. I was like, it was so clear to me what I was doing. I was like wasting so much time.
Just so much time.
Wasting time. Like, unbelievable. What, you know,
what is the point of being on social for 4 hours? Yeah, sorry.
Nothing. No. Nothing. It's like you create a life to be rich with time, and then you sit on your phone. But you know what this is? But I also think it's a maturing. I don't think we should be harsh on ourselves. It's like we were given this crack. It's just in technology form. Our brains have been wired into it. And now we're becoming aware of the fact that it's actually not adding much value to us. And so it's a nice sort of wake-up call to just like,
pull back a bit, yeah.
Okay, just extract yourself, you know? Yeah, pull back. But in saying that, I want to, you know, when we first started doing this podcast, the reason we started doing it is obviously Eric and I were chatting, and then Eric suggested we make a podcast. I said, Eric, I'll only do it if you do the technical stuff because I'm just not that way inclined. And he said, no problem. And we've been talking about going live on LinkedIn like for a few weeks now, and Eric, as the head of tech, failed again. I just want to tell everybody publicly, Muppet, why did we forget LinkedIn, man?
Where does that connection come from?
I don't know. I just remembered. I was like, damn it, why are we not on LinkedIn, man? You said we're going to be on LinkedIn.
Anyway. I did tell you we can be on LinkedIn very easily. We'll do it next time.
That's right. Apparently, that's what I've been told for the last three from podcasts. Anyway, just joking. But I agree. I think it's a great call. It's a great call.
It's so funny that you say, like, because you kind of get bored because now you're sitting there, you're like, what do I do now? Because your brain is almost so programmed to just go down that rabbit hole. And the first few times it happened to me, I'm like, okay, well, I might as well just like record a video now. I was like, oh, okay, so you're actually gonna be productive instead of like going down the rabbit hole.
Oh my God, bro, exactly.
And I mean, if you think of comparison being a muscle that strengthens with repetition, it also weakens if you don't exercise it. And I think that's something that I'm also trying to like just distance myself from that and not go on to berate and see where others are doing, but I want to learn. Like that's the big thing that I love about socials is everything that I've shared with you this morning has come from social, like from social scrolling.
Your first day with your
it needs to be more intentional, you know?
Yeah, okay.
No,
first it's day like with your new tongue.
My voice has been like hurting since yesterday. So like it's like I have to work harder to get the words out.
Okay. Well, is your brain just not working as clearly or what?
The brain is working fine. The voice box isn't working as well.
Look, I mean, yesterday I made a video, no, 2 days ago for YPO New York, and they asked me to make a video for them. Bro, I must have done that video. I'm not kidding. 18 times, I could not get it right. I was like, what is wrong with you fumbling over your words? Like, we're looking for a 60-second video. Nothing too deep. Could not. I mean, I was embarrassed. I started deleting all those 18 different types. My God. You know, some days it's just not working. Okay, let's
some days it doesn't work.
Yeah, it just doesn't
work. All right. The last one actually has a bit of a tie-in now to the first in the way that we kind of spoke about it. But I was with a team yesterday at an offsite, and I was like, the entire theme was around being more dangerous. And just a quick side note here, what's been really interesting for me is that I've really now come to the conclusion that this idea of being dangerous is extremely powerful in one-on-one coaching sessions and in like offsite sort of environments where it's small and intimate. Like, it really lands so deeply for people when they reflect on, are they being harmless? Are they being dangerous? What does it mean? What are the words that come to mind? Innovative, proactive, driven, like all these kind of things. Whereas if I deliver it from a stage, it just sounds like Tony Robbins shouting at you to be more dangerous. So it's been a real like aha moment for me over the past, I'd say like 2 months, that it's really landed for me that I'm not going to bring it to stages anymore. I haven't actually done that in a while. It's always like a slither of what I do. But anyway, so we were talking about like how to be more dangerous. And a part of what I wanted to do for them was to say, here's what I think it looks like to be dangerous in a new world that we find ourselves in. And I kind of shared three things. One was agency, which is this buzzword that's kind of going around at the moment, which is your ability to figure things out. So that you take ownership of what's happening in your world, but you are the kind of person that'll figure it out. You know, you'll, whatever comes your way, you'll sit with it. You'll make sure it happens. So that's the one part of it. The second part was this idea of being a multiplier. And it's based on a book from Liz Wiseman that says, good managers are multipliers, bad managers are diminishers. And that means that you bring out the best in people. The words are actually quite nice. She says, you extract and extend intelligence. So that's quite a nice way of phrasing it. You create the conditions for people to contribute to the best of their potential. So like beautiful language around it. And so we spoke about that. And then the third thing that I shared with them that I think makes you very dangerous today is your capacity to learn at a very high rate. And I've been speaking about that a lot more because I think people misunderstand what learning really is. Most of us think, and it actually ties into the entire conversation now that I think of it, most of us think that learning is consumption. And therefore, we go through this thing that we've mentioned before, which is that you think in glances, that you go onto your feed and you come across an idea and you love this idea and you go like, wow, this is really cool. And you maybe send it to a few friends and you maybe save it for later, but then you never really come back to it. Like in that moment, you glance at this idea, you think it's like, I can see how it impacts my life, but then you move on. And so what happens is it never becomes updated in your software. It never becomes part of how you view the world, how you make decisions in the world, how you move through the world. And ultimately, like if you really want to put a litmus test for what is learning, learning is when you do things differently, when you arrive at the same situation, but you choose a different path. And so that means that if we are going to be learning, we need to consume, and then that needs to be converted into output. That is the only measure of whether you are really learning something or not. And so what I've been actually trying to do more actively in my life is to run very specific 30 or 60 day experiments. So for example, I've been spending a bit more time creating YouTube videos. And when you create a YouTube video, you have this thing called a retention graph. And the retention graph shows you how long people stick around for. Now, typically what you see is like, you'll see like a slow decline, and then it shows how people are dropping off over time. But you might want to end with like a 60% retention rate. But what's most important is like those first 30 seconds. And my retention rate on those first 30 seconds is like a cliff. It's like it does this. And I was like, okay, so actually my hooks, the way that I introduce my things isn't strong enough. It's not keeping people. Like once they, if they stay through the bad hook, then they listen to the rest of the content. They like it. You know, that stays flat. But that first part, I'm losing them. And so I've just said to myself, for the next 30 days, that's all I'm worried about, is can I become better at creating hooks? And it has a spillover effect into my writing, into my keynotes, into so many other things. But I've chosen a slither of a skill that I just want to focus on. And I think that is ultimately probably the best way for us to be learning, because there's just so much to consume. And if consumption is your measurement, then you're going to drown, number one. But two, you're actually not going to change how you show up, because it's never been converted into action. Whereas if experimentation is your measurement, now there's tangible outcomes, but there's also tangible improvement because you can measure it. So it's a bit of a rant, but like that's, you know, I think we need to be much better at learning and not confusing it with like the dopamine hit of just consuming content and thinking that's
very
good enough.
Very good. I agree. So that's very good. I really enjoy that. I've got a relationship coach I'm working with, and every time we end a session, he says to me, I'm now understand his advice. His advice is, so I said, okay, so what should I do now with that? He says, nothing. Just be aware of this new information that you have. That's it. Just go back into that situation and lean into the thing that used to trigger you. Lean in. But now you have new information. Now let's see how you behave differently. And now, like, watch yourself through this process now and see what happens. And it's the best advice I've actually ever been given. He's not telling you to do anything except hold space, stay aware, you have some new information. And so, yes, I agree with you so much, is that we do see a lot of these sort of things, and what do we do with them? And to break it down into a slither of behavior change at a time, the slither of a behavior change at a time is really the only way that you're going to get it right. So I think that's perfect. Can you tell me a little bit more about agency? So when you tell them that you need agency, because I've also seen this from other friends of mine who's speaking, one in New York, actually. He was also using agency as one of his. So how do people become more agent? And because, you know, you're talking to people that have been addicted to certainty and stuck in a system of the corporate machine. And there is some level of agency there. But, you know, entrepreneurship is really the ultimate test of agency and kind of birth from that. Right. So what would you say the steps are to move from that to more agency?
It's quite funny, because when I was doing the offsite, I said to them, that's the one thing I'm not going to speak to you about, because I think in your process of taking ownership of being more of a multiplier, in your process of focusing on learning, you actually improve your agency automatically, because it is just you taking ownership of not being a victim in that situation. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And agency there was this guy that wrote a big blog post, George Mack, I think is his name. And it kind of blew up. And I think he's even writing a book about it now. So it became like the buzzword of the moment, you know, agency. But I think it just comes back to what we've always said, which is you have ownership in your life. And sometimes things happen to you and it feels like you have less ownership, that life is more happening to you. And especially when the world is changing, then it's much easier to feel like I'm out of control and I don't have a solid footing for where I'm standing. Agency is going, how do I anchor myself back into the present, into the future, through purpose, through action, through people? How do I take more control of the things that I can control? And that often starts by just identifying these small slithers of where I can be better. Because to try and do all of it at once, it's just so overwhelming that you'll most likely do nothing. And these small slithers just create the momentum that you need to become more agentic and more agentic, I think, as you move up.
Look, I think there's two ways to do this. And I think yours is one way. It's almost like coming from the outside in. I would suggest, and I didn't have the answer until you started speaking, is that there's a process of inside out, right? Because I think agency, when you've discovered your genius, is so easy. Agency, when you haven't got a clue who you are besides the diploma or degree you've had and the job that you've been stuck in for the last 12 years, now all of a sudden you must have agency. You're like, I think agency also is very much linked, of course, get out of the victim mode. Yes, of course, that's a deep psychological process. But I also think that connecting with your genius allows agency to be so much more fluid and so much more easy. And I think that maybe in order to find your genius, you need to have agency of moving towards responding to that question or that innate feeling that you need something else or something new. So maybe the agency needs to be split and say, okay, so if you are on purpose, agency becomes quite obvious. If you're not on purpose, the agency needs to be directed towards finding your purpose so agency can become obvious. And I think it's got to be like a directed agency, because if you are stuck in something, in a role or a job or a career or a business that you hate, the agency is to be focused to get out of it. The agency should be, you know, focused to connect first and then to do all the others, you know. So
there's a book by I like what you're saying. I think it's both inside out and outside in process.
Yes.
And there's a book by a lady, I think her name is Marie, I forget her second name, but the book is called Figure Outable. And I think like that word kind of like encapsulates for me what agency is. It's like, are you kind of the kind of person that will figure things out? And if you are, then like you'll be just fine. And I think that's why it became so popular, because that means no matter what life throws at you, you'll figure it out. And if you don't have that, then that's a bit of a problem.
It's a huge characteristic from entrepreneur organization.
Yes.
And the more work I do with them around the world, the more of them I meet, and I keep seeing them and meeting them. And now I'm friends with social media with them. I've been friends with some of these people that I've only seen at conferences maybe 6 years now. And dude, they're continuously doing new things. And I'm like, what? And so like, they just got the agency to solve a problem, put something together. They've done it before. They can do it again. Blah, 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 blah. And they're just doing amazing things. And you have to be.
As an entrepreneur, you have to be.
And so the age of that, yeah, you have to be. That's your survival mechanism. Whereas in the corporate world, you didn't have that as a necessity to survival, you know? So,
you could do the bare minimum and still get paid. Whereas like if you do it in entrepreneurship, you're screwed. So you need to have that as a baseline requirement.
That's why I don't like employees. You know, I like freelancers. It's like I don't owe you anything, you know? But you know, that victim mindset that sits underneath this, that idea that why is the world so tough and who's coming to save us, is really the Achilles heel for you to have any agency to do anything. And if you're stuck in some story about the color of my skin, the gender of my thing, the where I grew up and who, oh God, you're going to be stuck there forever, dude, ever and ever. I mean, I did a talk there for that event, and my team dissected the talk and they put the pieces together about suffering from victimhood, but then still wanting to leapfrog the world into innovation. And I was like, as Africa, what we have to do is get over that past, as horrific as it was, get over it to start to build something new. But the longer we hold on to it, the longer we don't have agency. And it's such a powerful word, you know, to really unpack and say, what does it mean to have agency for yourself? You almost have to change your identity sometimes, you know?
Those are all my points.
Great. Well, thank you very much. That was a great pod. And until next week, I'll be in Dubai. No, where will I be? I think I'll be in Switzerland next week when we
record. Out of your prison cell.
Out of my prison cell and into Zurich, one of my favorite cities in the world.
Nice. So, very nice.
Yeah. Next pod will be coming.
Dude, always a pleasure. I really enjoyed the chat.
You're gonna close us off or what?
And to everyone listening. Just leave that in, by the way.
Jesus, the professionalism on this pod is beyond anything we've ever experienced.
I don't we get to 250 episodes.
I think it's by hook or by crook, we stumbled across 250 episodes.
To everyone listening, thank you so much. It is always great to spend time with you. We hope that you enjoyed spending time with us. And if you enjoy it, we'd love for you to leave a review on iTunes or on Spotify. And make sure to tune in next week when we also go live on LinkedIn. So you can catch us
ooh,
there.
This is big. This is big.
Until next time, be expensive. Bye-bye.
Ciao. Ciao.